The Guardian.
Particle physicists are not for getting carried away. But today, Professor Peter Higgs got a rock star's welcome. The particle he first dreamt up more than 40 years ago appears to have been discovered.
In July 2012, scientists at CERN, the particle physics lab near Geneva, announced that they had finally found the Higgs boson, famously dubbed the God particle by the late Nobel laureate Leon Lederman.
When it was first proposed, the idea for the Higgs boson was almost insane. Yet here today, something that looks very much like it has been proven to exist.
It was a day most particle physicists will never forget. A year later, two of the theorists behind the Higgs boson and its mechanism for making particles massive won the Nobel Prize. Anyone who helped find the particle will tell you it was a long and grueling process. Physicist Peter Higgs, his fellow Nobel laureate François Englert, and others had thrashed out the theory in the 1960s. For many scientists, it became a life's work to prove them right.
Well, I would like to add my congratulations to everybody involved in this tremendous achievement. For me, it's really an incredible thing that it's happened in my lifetime.
To find the elusive particle, physicists at CERN sifted through the subatomic debris of more than 1,000 trillion proton collisions. These took place in a machine that whipped up two opposing beams of protons to nearly the speed of light before steering them into head-on collisions. That machine was the Large Hadron Collider, an accelerator that cost $5 billion to build and $1 billion every year to run. The LHC remains the largest and most powerful particle accelerator in the world. But perhaps not for long. With the LHC reaching its upper limits, scientists around the world are drawing up plans for a new generation of super colliders.
I think what one really would like would be one proton-proton machine and one electron-positron machine. That would, that in the past has always been a very valuable combination. There are some things you can really only see with proton machines and some things which are very difficult to see except with electron-positron machines. So that would be the ideal situation, I think.
Different countries are looking at different designs. In Europe, proposals for a couple of future colliders will be reviewed by an international panel as part of the European Strategy for Particle Physics. It should reach a conclusion in 2020. None of these machines will come cheap, and so scientists will have to weigh up whether the potential for new discoveries a collider may make justify the cost.
But if I have to ask myself if that's the best way that we can invest such large amount of money into the foundations of physics, then I think building a larger collider is just not the best thing that we can do.
How do we decide what, if anything, to build? In the physics community and in science more broadly, it's a debate that rumbles on. How much do we stand to gain by going ahead with a massive new machine? Should the money go into other projects instead? And what happens if we call time on the days of the huge collider? I'm Ian Sample, and this is Science Weekly. To help me dig into super colliders this week, I'm joined on the line by
Brian Foster. I'm Alexander von Humboldt Professor at the University of Hamburg and DAISY, and also Donald H. Perkins Professor of Experimental Physics at the University of Oxford.
And by
I'm Sabine Hossenfelder, and I'm a physicist at the Frankfurt Institute for Advanced Studies.
Brian, we were in touch a few weeks back when CERN first revealed its designs for a future circular collider, a machine that would be four times the size of the Large Hadron Collider. But before we discuss that, can we talk a little bit about the LHC itself? How does that machine look for new physics? And when it first switched on about a decade ago now, what were scientists hoping to find?
So the basic principle of all particle colliders and indeed accelerators is that if you accelerate particles to very high energy and then bring them into collision, the energy can be made available to create new particles through Einstein's famous E equals mc squared. So the name of the game is to try to concentrate as much energy as you can into particular collisions. In the case of the Large Hadron Collider, the LHC, then that takes place by colliding protons with other protons, proton is a complex object. It has three quarks inside it, which have fractional charge, and it's surrounded by lots of gluons. And when you collide that very complicated object with another complicated object, you get a lot of mess coming off. The difficulty with the LHC is to try from that enormous quantity of data, to try to extract the interesting science. And it turns out that has been remarkably successful. I mean, many people were somewhat dubious that you would be able to extract the physics from these very complicated collisions, but it turns out that one can devise methods to do that. And that led, 6 years ago now, to the discovery of the Higgs boson, which was the thing that people expected to find at the Large Hadron Collider. It was the last missing building block, if you like, of the standard model of particle physics and cosmology. So finding that was enormously exciting. If you asked what people expected to find, well, they certainly expected to find the Higgs boson. There was also a very strong expectation, particularly among theoretical physicists, that we would find evidence of a deeper symmetry of nature called supersymmetry, which is a very beautiful idea, which would mean that there would be lots more particles, like the quarks, and the electron and muon, but which would have a slightly different intrinsic angular momentum, or spin as we call it. It turns out that the evidence for that hasn't appeared, and that has certainly caused some puzzlement among my theoretical colleagues. But that, I think, is then the sort of dog which hasn't barked, the LHC.
I remember being over at CERN before the LHC had been put in the ground while they were still pulling out LEP, the previous collider, and physicists then were talking to me, yes, about the Higgs boson, yes, about supersymmetry, but they were also talking about dark matter candidates. They were also talking about potentially seeing things like extra spatial dimensions and so on. I'm just wondering if the discovery of the Higgs alone makes the LHC worth it to physicists. If that's all the machine finds, do you think it will go down as a success?
Oh, yes. The trouble is, because we sort of expected to find it, there's a tendency to downplay the importance of the discovery. But actually, it is a quite incredible particle. It's the only thing of its sort that we know about in the universe. As far as we know, elementary particle, which has no other properties except those of the vacuum. It's really very remarkable. It's like going back to the old days of the ether. And so discovering that and understanding its properties is really the big thing that particle physicists have to focus on in the next 10 or 20 years or so. And if we can understand the Higgs boson and find out more about its properties and how it works, then that will be certainly enough to justify the building of the LHC.
Sabine, let's bring you in here. I mean, do you think the LHC has proved its worth already, or is the jury still out?
No, I definitely think that the LHC has proved its worth. It is correct that a lot of physicists expected to see the Higgs boson, but I think in hindsight, they were more certain about it than before it was found. There were actually alternative theories what it could have been, or it could have been a more complicated Higgs. So it's definitely important to have it confirmed.
And what about these other signs of physics beyond the standard model that physicists were talking about at the time? Were you expecting to find those? And does it matter that they've not been found?
So I did not expect that they would be found. The reason is that there were particular theoretical arguments that people made for why they should show up at the Large Hadron Collider close by the discovery of the Higgs boson, basically. Well, I did not find these reasons very compelling, so I didn't really expect it. And it matters a big deal that the LHC actually has not found them, because that shows that this kind of reasoning just did not work. And now the thing is that since we know that the reasoning did not work, there is no good reason to expect that a next larger collider would see any of that.
Brian, before we get on to that next collider, whatever it may be, the LHC has life in it yet. Can you tell us a bit about the plans for that machine when it comes back online after the shutdown? And I think there's probably another shutdown at some point in the future after the next run.
Yes, there's a sort of master plan for the LHC running, which stretches out to 2038 now. And there are several more long shutdowns. And those things are very important for a variety of reasons, partially to allow the experiments to upgrade themselves. The very innermost parts of the experiments get very strongly irradiated. And that means that eventually they're typically made of silicon, that the silicon needs to be replaced. In addition, then they try to upgrade, and new developments in electronics and technology allow you to get more precision on measuring the particles coming from the interactions. So that's one of the reasons for the shutdowns. And the other ones are to improve things in the accelerator itself, which will be what's going on in what's called the high luminosity LHC. So what's happening is the accelerator itself is being improved to allow the physicists and accelerator engineers to inject more current, which then produces more interactions and more things, rare things of interest. And the expectation is that there will be a great deal of exciting physics to be done.
And are there particular things that physicists would like to look for, actual sort of targets that can be named like the Higgs?
Well, the Higgs is really, I think, at the moment, the thing that we're particularly interested in, because it is the new particle on the block. Mm. And we know very little about it so far. And that will give us, hopefully, clues as to where to look for new phenomena beyond the Standard Model. Because the thing is that we know that there must be physics beyond the Standard Model, if for no other reason than, as you mentioned, there's very strong evidence that there is dark matter in the universe, and that dark matter must be made of particles of some sort, and we have no candidate for those particles at the moment.
Well, I would like to object on the probability of finding dark matter, because we know there has to be something out there. It is certainly true that the astrophysical observations that we have that are normally explained by dark matter are very compelling. But so far, we do not have any evidence that it actually is a particle. And if it is a particle, it's not necessarily a heavy particle that would be good to search for with high energetic particle collisions. There is an alternative idea that it is actually a modification of gravity we're looking at. It is true that that we know that the Standard Model is incomplete, that there has to be more, but we have no good reason to think that it is within a reachable energy range.
After the break, we'll look at specific plans for future colliders. Oh, and we'll be hearing about plenty more objections regarding supercolliders.
But if you want to make progress in our understanding of the foundations of physics, that's just currently not a promising thing to invest in. And I don't think that's so terribly controversial, but a lot of particle physicists clearly did not like me saying this publicly.
No, I beg to differ. I think it is very controversial, and I think it's wrong.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this.
It's time to focus.
They rush the baby to the hospital, and that's when they start accusing Imelda. They say, well, you try to kill your daughter.
Today in Focus is the new daily podcast from The Guardian. Join me, Anushka Astana, for the best stories from our journalists around the world. Subscribe now to Today in Focus from The Guardian.
Welcome back to Science Weekly. I'm Ian Sample. This week, we're looking at whether or not we need another massive particle collider in the world. But before that, I would like to ask for a moment of your time. The Guardian is completely independent, so there's no shareholders or billionaire owners pulling our strings or our stories. But it does mean that we need to ask you, our Science Weekly listeners, for your support. We need you to help us keep challenging the status quo and holding power to account. Today, more than 1 million people are helping to secure our future, and you can join them. Just visit gu.com/sciencepod or find that link in the show notes for this episode. Thanks. Now, CERN recently announced a new proposal to build a machine that would dwarf the Large Hadron Collider. It could cost around $23 billion. But CERN isn't the only lab looking at building such a monster machine.
Well, there are two main sorts of new machines that people are thinking about, and it's useful just to think for a moment about what they are. So one is essentially a large version of the Large Hadron Collider, a larger version, typically 100 kilometers in circumference. And the other is to build a linear collider to collide electrons and positrons. So there are these two sort of different sorts of machines, the circular machines, predominantly intended for proton-proton, and the linear colliders intended for electron-positron collisions. Basically, there are sort of two different electron-positron machines. One is called the ILC, the International Linear Collider, which is currently under consideration for construction in Japan by the Japanese government. And the other is the CLIC machine, which is a possibility at CERN. Then for the large circular machines, there are two main possibilities. One is in China called CEPC, and the other one is at CERN called FCC, which is the thing which was announced fairly recently last month.
Considering the cost of the LHC, I wondered if we really needed more similar machines. I put this to Brian.
I think what one really would like would be one proton-proton machine and one electron-positron machine. That would, that in the past, has always been a very valuable combination. There are some things you can really only see with proton machines and some things which are very difficult to see except with electron-positron machines. So that would be the ideal situation, I think. I think it's certainly true that we don't need to have two large proton-proton machines.
It sounds like the FCC is quite a complicated program. Either there are different versions of it that one would pick, or it's actually almost modular and is built up. Can you just explain how it would be constructed, what this machine would look like, and if it's actually changing as time goes by to be a different type of collider at different points?
These things are all just very early proposals, so they will certainly change with time, and they already have. The first thing you need for any of these things is you have to build a large tunnel. The current LHC tunnel is too small to allow you to get to the Higgs threshold without losing enormous amounts of energy through synchrotron radiation. So you need a big tunnel in order to be able to comfortably sit on the Higgs with electron positrons and do the study. So it's the sine qua non is the tunnel. And then you decide what you put in it. And as I said, I certainly and many other people think it's sensible to start off with electron positron in order to give you a signpost for where you would like to go with a proton machine. A proton machine is much more expensive. The magnets you need to bend very energetic protons are much more expensive.
These machines aren't going to be cheap. Early estimates suggest the Chinese accelerator could cost about $6 billion. In Japan, scientists have called on the plans that Brian mentioned earlier for an international linear collider because of its $7 billion price tag. As ever, the question is, where will the money come from?
It's difficult to see precisely how you would pay for that, and that's one of the problems with FCC. CERN has a budget, which is roughly $1 billion a year, of which the UK pays about £140 million this year. So that budget has a fraction which can be used to build new machines, so that the LHC was essentially built on a constant CERN budget. So the CERN budget hasn't changed really, except for one or two smaller new members. And from that budget, CERN has been able to build a Large Hadron Collider. And the idea would be that you would try and build the FCC from that budget. The difficulty is it's a bit too expensive to build inside the CERN budget. So I think you would need quite substantial contributions from other countries in the world, outside Europe.
Sabine, if this is what particle physicists say they need, we should go ahead and build it, shouldn't we?
Of course, particle physicists want to do particle physics. I entirely agree that it would be interesting to learn more about the Higgs. But if I have to ask myself if that's the best way that we can invest such large amount of money into the foundations of physics, then I think building a larger collider is just not the best thing that we can do.
What would you do if it was up to you? Would you wait and see what's known when the LHC comes to the end of its very final run, the high luminosity run, or and what else is going on more broadly in physics at the time?
Yeah, certainly. It seems smarter to me to wait and see if we have any reason to think that there's even more to discover with a larger machine. And meanwhile, it seems to me a better investment into progress if we focus our experimental efforts in areas where we have better reason to think that that we will find something new.
And what sort of areas would they be?
Well, the obvious thing to say is that we have good evidence that there's something odd going on in the cosmos with dark matter that was already mentioned, but we still don't really know what it is. So it makes sense to collect more information about this, which concretely means you need better telescopes. You need bigger telescopes. Those cost money. There are other things that you can look at. For example, there are various plans about other gravitational wave interferometers. You can also just look into completely different areas, atomic nuclear physics, for example. You can make high precision measurements at low energies instead of going to higher energies. There are some other areas that tend to go completely unnoticed, more or less, which is quantum gravity and the foundations of quantum mechanics. Those all seem to me areas where we're much more likely to make progress, and yet the investments into experiments would not be as high.
Doesn't that make sense, Brian, that you wait until you really know where your money will give you the best odds of getting something new, finding something really profound? Colliders aren't the only game in town.
No, of course not. And I agree with everything that's been said about the other areas of physics which are interesting. But of course, all of those areas are being pursued with, full speed ahead. Gravitational wave detectors are being improved all the time. Gravitational waves detectors will go into space. All of those things, atomic physics experiments are also being pursued. Quantum gravity, et cetera, is being pursued. And all of those things should go ahead by all means. We're not talking about stopping some of those in order to fund big accelerators. And we certainly will wait until we've seen the LHC before we decide definitively what to do. But if you're to make particle physics accelerators, and the chances are very strongly that we will need them to answer questions like dark matter, despite what Sabina says, then we need to start now. We can't sit back and wait for 20 years until we have the final results for the LHC and then decide, oh, well, maybe we need to build a 100 kilometers accelerator. If you wait then, you'll wait another 20 years before it comes online, and you'll not get graduate students, and the whole subject will die. So it's not an option to sit back on your hands and wait. You have to be laying the groundwork for these big projects well in advance, decades in advance, for them to have a chance to be buildable when you finally know exactly what it is that you're aiming at.
It is certainly true that if you do not start planning and eventually building the next larger collider rather soon, then you will have a pause between the end of the existing collider, the LHC, and its upgrades, and the beginning of the next larger machine, if there is one. So that's certainly a risk that in a situation like this, you will have a shrinking of the community. But this is something that you can learn to deal with. And I do not think that this in and by itself is a reason to fund a next larger particle collider. I think that's a pretty terrible reason, actually.
Well, I mean, nobody's suggesting that building a new particle accelerator is some sociological experiment to keep particle physics going. Nobody will get the money for sure unless there's a compelling physics case. But what we're doing at the moment, as I've said several times, is setting up the conceptual framework for building a new accelerator. Nobody's going to give us the money to build a new accelerator, a new proton accelerator, until it's much clearer what the situation will be. I think there's already a compelling physics case to build a linear electron-positron collider, because that will start off by telling us an enormous amount of physics about the Higgs particle, which we absolutely need to know in order to know where the best place to look is for the new phenomena that we know must be out there somewhere. I think it's clear that there will not be a case made to world governments to build a 100-kilometer machine to do proton-proton physics until we know significantly more about particle physics than we do at the moment. And the best way to do that is to carry on doing the experiments that we are currently doing at the LHC and to complement those by building a linear collider to produce Higgs particles, which will give us a much better idea of the properties of the Higgs boson.
And Sabine, you've had a fair bit of flack for some of your criticisms for the FCC, haven't you? From within the community.
Sad but true, I did expect it. Fact is that we have no reason to think that a next larger particle collider will actually tell us anything new about the fundamental laws of nature. There's certainly, you know, some constants that you can always measure better. You can always say, well, I want to measure more precisely exactly what the Higgs is doing and how that particle decays and so on and so forth. But if you want to make progress in our understanding of the foundations of physics, that's just currently not a promising thing to invest in. And I don't think that's so terribly controversial, but a lot of particle physicists clearly did not like me saying this publicly.
No, I beg to differ. I think it is very controversial, and I think it's wrong. As I've tried to say several times, I mean, the way in which you can make progress in particle physics is by making these precision measurements. I mean, you know very well that quantum mechanics is such that if you can make very high precision measurements, it can tell you a lot about things at much higher energies than you can reach in a laboratory. So that's the purpose of doing very high precision physics at the LHC. It's not like stamp collecting. You're trying to make measurements which will be sufficiently precise that they will give you a very strong indication of where there may be new physics at higher energies.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. The more precisely you measure, the more sensitive you are to the high energy contributions. But still, there's no good reason right now to think that there is anything to find, is what I'm saying.
But that's not true. I mean, it's quite clear that, as you said yourself, that the standard model is incomplete. Therefore, if we can measure the absolutely outstanding particle in the standard model, the Higgs boson, which is completely unique, to very high precision, then the chances are very strong that we will find some indication of what that physics beyond the standard model is.
So exactly what physics beyond the standard model are you referring to there?
I have no idea. That's why I want to do the measurements.
Well, the only reliable prediction that we have for physics beyond the standard model is either quantum gravity, which is all the way up at the Planck scale, or if you believe that the neutrinos have Dirac masses, then you have the right-handed neutrinos. But their masses also at the latest have to appear somewhere, I don't know, 1-2 orders of magnitude below the Planck scale. You're trying to tell me that you will be sensitive to those contributions?
Look, it's a great mistake to be too strongly led by theoretical models. What one has to do is to do the measurements to the highest precision possible. And now history of physics, not just particle physics, in the past 40 or 50 years has shown again and again that if you can make extremely precise measurements, then you will open up new areas of study.
Yeah, sure. You could say the same thing about any other measurement, any other new experiment. You measure to higher precision, you may find something new. That's not a good argument to build a larger collider specifically.
No, I'm sorry, it is, because quantum mechanics is not the same as doing experiments with normal physics that I think you're referring to. In quantum mechanics, there is a direct link between precision and the mass scale. So if you want to get to higher masses, then you have to do enormously precise experiments.
I decided to jump in here and move the discussion on because I could see this continuing for quite a while. There will come a point, though, won't there, when colliders have had their day, that they've done everything that they can do in terms of that particular type of machine has been useful for a huge energy range, and then maybe scientists will decide, look, there are other ways to do it now. Is that going to be on the horizon, do you think?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think circular colliders are coming to the end because of this synchrotron radiation, which is a problem for particle physicists, but a boon for people who want to understand the structure of drugs. But that's where these new technologies of the future can come in. So looking at plasma wake field acceleration, for example, can very strongly reduce the size of the linear colliders that you would need to build, because the accelerating gradient is 3 orders of magnitude larger. but it's still very, very much R and D. It's more R than D. So there's a long, long way to go before you could use these new techniques. But the whole thing has got to carry on in parallel. You've got to think of new methods of acceleration at the same time as you're using the current ones to try to do experimental physics.
So what I'm saying is there are other experiments that are more promising but less costly. So we should do those instead of building the next larger collider.
And my answer to that would be that we need to do them all, and there's no earthly reason why we can't do them all.
Well, if we lived in a world with infinite resources, we could do it all, but that's just not reality. We have to make decisions.
Sorry, I mean, nobody's saying we don't have to make decisions. All I'm saying is that all of these other things which you mentioned are all going ahead. I mean, there's advances being made in all
no,
of these
No, they're
areas.
Not.
Yes,
that's just not true.
I'm sorry,
no,
it
well,
is.
Look, for example... Look at the square kilometer.
It's a debate we'll be following in the coming years, I'm sure. And if you have any thoughts on the matter, we'd like to hear from you. Just email scienceweekly@theguardian.com. That's all for this week. Thank you to Sabine Hossenfelder and Brian Foster for joining us on the show. You can find links to their work on our website, guardian.com/podcasts. This week's episode was produced by Danielle Stevens. I'm Ian Sample. Thanks for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.